I realized that if I was going to do this, this was the feeling that we were going to have all the time. And that somehow I had to change my mindset from fearing that to embracing it.
Hey there, I'm Julie. Welcome to Uncomfy, a podcast about sticking with moments that challenge us. We share the stories of real people in moments that challenge their perspective. And instead of getting angry or shutting down, they stuck with the discomfort. They stayed open and curious, and they're glad they did. We hope these stories inspire you to stick with it too, because there is so much to gain. New empathy, deeper relationships, more clarity about our own views. I'm glad you're here. Now, let's get uncomfy. Here's a story about embracing uncertainty with a lot on the line. I'm joined by Nicholas Ma. He produced the absolutely delightful Mr. Rogers documentary a few years ago called Won't You Be My Neighbor? I hope you've seen it. And now he's got a new documentary that he's directed called Leap of Faith, and it's in theaters as we speak. It's about these 12 Christian leaders from a range of backgrounds and very different beliefs who are grappling over the course of a year in regular meetings as they try to find common ground around some of the most contentious issues in our society. It's inspiring, at times deeply uncomfortable, both to watch and to reflect upon, but I really, really enjoyed it. So I'm so pleased to have Nicholas Ma with me. Welcome to Uncomfy.
It's so great to be here, Julie. I feel like our paths are so aligned in terms of what needs to be in the world and not underestimating ourselves, you know, in terms of what we can tolerate and what's on the other side of that.
Yeah. We can do hard things, but also that it can actually be good for us, shockingly at times. The making of this film involved a number of uncomfy, stick-with-it moments, as we described them, where you had to choose to lean into the discomfort and stay curious. Would you tell us about one?
You know, we could have titled the film A Series of Uncomfortable Events. You know, it's like really throughout, you know, even the first reach out to Michael Gulker was completely blind. I had read an article about him in The Wall Street Journal, and I just sent him an email and said, hey, would you be willing to chat? And both of us were not in each other's lives, knew nothing about each other's character, you know. Yeah. That all the traditional suspicions were there.
And just for folks, Michael Gulker then is the founder of the Colossian Forum, and he's a Christian faith leader, but also who convenes other faith leaders to work on various issues. So this is the individual
right.
That you're reaching out to. And you yourself identify as a person of faith, a Christian?
Yeah, I do. I grew up as a New England Episcopalian. So okay. Make of that what you will. I can tell you it's part of the discomfort of all of this. You know, I was speaking with Michael, and exactly as you said, he'd been sort of healing congregations across difference, but really in that sort of reformed evangelical space. And in his eyes, or certainly in the eyes of many of his colleagues, being a New England Episcopalian, I'm not sure really counted as Christian at all. And so the suspicion of who is this outsider coming in to talk to us. And then this feeling of mine, feeling like, well, I maybe don't totally love being regarded as an outsider. Why are we drawing this line? But we were trying to figure out a project perhaps to do together, because I loved his thesis, which was we can live together across difference, right? Not resolving the difference, but actually live in that tension, and that tension can offer us something. It's so counterintuitive to everything else that's, or countercultural to everything else that we get told, that it just sort of stuck in my head. And we were going to try to do something nationally or something in, you know, one of the big cities. And then he said, you know what, I need to do it in Grand Rapids. And Grand Rapids is a city that I knew nothing about. And it's where he lives, where his work is based. It's a very Christian city. It's the heart of the Reformed movement. It's the heart of, like, Christian publishing, Christian universities, and not famously friendly to outsiders. And all of a sudden, I wondered about this project that I was doing, you know, this preconception of what it might be. You know, there's so little you can control in a verite film because you're just watching the story unfold. And so when more and more elements of control get taken away, you start to feel more and more anxious and you want to protect yourself, right? And I remember the day Michael called me up and said, we're going to go through with this project, but we're going to do it in Grand Rapids, and you can choose to come with us or not. And it was not an ultimatum. It was very generous. It was saying, you know, if we don't want to partner, that's fine. But it was also enormous clarity on his part that he needed to do it there. And it was this I remember vividly, I was standing in the hallway of my apartment and I just sort of froze. You know, what does that mean? Like, I don't know where I would get crew in Grand Rapids, you know, from basic stuff. I don't know where I would stay in Grand Rapids, to much bigger questions. Like, all of a sudden, it's not, I don't know what this story is. Is this a small story about a small city? I don't even know what I'm doing anymore, right? And I honestly think I wanted to just sort of crawl into bed and I managed to sort of say to Michael, with sort of as collected as I could be, can you just give me 24 hours to just, do you need an answer right now? Can I have a little bit of time just to sort of process this? And I'm so grateful for that time, you know, that pause, because while I think Michael would have loved an answer right there, and I think my response made him very uncomfortable because we had been talking for so long and sort of excited about this together. But in that pause in both sides was a kind of space for, like, the snow in a snow globe to settle and to reveal what is the scene below, right? Like the static in your head to just dissipate a little bit. And I realized that if I was going to do this, this was the feeling that we were going to have all the time. And that somehow I had to change my mindset from fearing that to embracing it, right? Seeing it as generative versus destructive.
Yeah. Well, do you think then that, that had you resisted and said, no, I can't do it in Grand Rapids, we're going to have to do it in Chicago or LA or New York or where you're based, right? Like, that's, you know, we're going to have to do it my way so that I can have the control and feel comfortable about this. Would the film have worked?
No. I think this release happened so many times over the course of the making of this film. And at each moment, if the person being asked to surrender had held on, it wouldn't have worked. It is this process of saying, I have to surrender, and in that surrender I may be hurt, and I am strong enough to do that, and in fact it is a cost, but a cost that comes with its own extraordinary rewards as well. And I think that's the thing about it, that surrender, you don't know that in advance, you can't know that in advance, but I'm so grateful that everyone made that, you know, took that leap.
If we could be just a little bit more specific without, of course, and it's not like there's anything really huge to give away. You know, the beauty of this film is in sort of just being with the process as it unfolds. But when you talk about surrender, I guess I'm thinking about it, having seen the film, as there are several moments in which people are hurting. They're hearing things from other people in this circle who call themselves Christian that are very difficult to hear, that feel even, for this one, Pastor Joan, that go right to the core of who she is as a gay woman. And so it's pain. There's a lot of, like, pain being experienced on screen. Yeah. And it's also very uncomfortable for the viewer. I mean, it was in those moments where I was thinking, wait, is this not going to be a kumbaya film? Like, hang on a second. Mm-hmm. I thought they were all going to come together and find common ground and learn to love one another. And which is not to say that they don't learn to love one another, but...
But it's not a kumbaya film, you know.
Yeah, they're not really bridging. I mean, they're building relationships.
Yeah.
But they're not resolving differences, which is not a comfortable place to be in, I think, for a lot of us. What was it like for you as the filmmaker?
You know, it's interesting. I have come to realize something about what endures in making this movie. And the temptation to want agreement is actually born of a desire for the pain to end.
Which I think is also why we step away from uncomfortable conversations and uncomfortable situations a lot of times. Like, this is, okay, too much.
Exactly. There's only two ways it can end. We walk away from each other or we agree. And I think what's beautiful is when you do build a relationship, when you really build a relationship, it endures across those disagreements. And in some ways, those disagreements help it mature and grow And that is, I think, what's so beautiful. Like, what's happened after the film has been so remarkable about how these relationships have given rise to these new ideas, these new collaborations between these pastors that were not in any way intended at the beginning of the process.
What have you seen?
Artie, one of the most conservative pastors, called Molly, by far the most liberal pastor, and invited her to his very conservative Believe in the City event, where they sort of pray over the Constitution for a couple hours and really focus on, you know, that side of things. And Molly came, and she came back the second day. And then she bought two books on the Constitution because she felt like she really didn't know it as well as she should. Molly then invited James, the member of the Historically Black Church pastor, to join her North End pastor group. That group had never had a member from the Historically Black Church in it. He was the first. He's become the most active member in it. James, in watching the movie, realized something about his relationship with Joan and called her up and said, hey, we need to collaborate because we're so much more aligned than I thought we were in the making of the film, and it was only in seeing it that I realized that.
And Joan is?
Yeah, so James, Historically Black Church pastor, theologically conservative. Joan, married lesbian Methodist pastor, you know, grew up Baptist, and now Methodist. And these were all complicated relationships, right? Of this group, you know, 7 of the 12 would not officiate a same-sex wedding. So, you know, there's these deep divisions, particularly around sexuality, for certainly for Joan. And James and Joan saw each other in a different way after the movie. And Joan called up Artie and said, I grew up Baptist and I felt like I've had to reject that tradition because it rejected me. But our relationship allows me to hold on to and embrace the parts of that tradition that I loved without feeling like it's an accommodation or a refutation of who I am. So none of those were the objectives of it, but they come from relationship, not from objectives, right? If the objective were, how do we make our North End pastor group more diverse? James could have joined, but it would have been some kind of, that would have been the goal, and then it would have been be over. The fact that that wasn't the goal means that when it happened, it's continued and it's grown and it's blossomed. And I feel like that's the thing that I think about, you know, when I think about this movie. And maybe this comes back to your point. I mean, it's so interesting how our work is so aligned. We have this temptation to say, okay, well, if the extreme right and the extreme left can't ever get along, then it's impossible. And I almost think we need to think about it from the opposite vantage point of saying, are there three relationships in your life that you want to love across better and could love across better? And if so, can you do that today and do it a little bit more tomorrow? And I think almost anyone can say yes, right? And when I think about these 12 pastors, that's what they did over the course of a year, is try to say, okay, can I learn to love you a little bit better today than I did yesterday and a little bit better tomorrow? And the results are extraordinary. But you have to have faith that those results will come, right? Faith with a lowercase f. You can't sort of aim for it, because if you aim for it in some funny way, it's more hollow. And if you don't aim for it, if you just say, I want to love you, what comes of that is beautiful.
So what was it that you, what was the film you thought you were making? Or why did you want to try to make a film, some sort of documentary about faith leaders?
I mean, coming out of Won't You Be My Neighbor, I think all of us were struck by how Fred Rogers took his faith tradition, expressed it in universal terms, and somehow spoke so specifically to so many children. He was a Presbyterian minister who never mentioned God or faith in any of his work, but his belief that every child deserves to be loved and to know that he or she is lovable and capable of loving is directly from his faith tradition. And the question at the end of every screening was always, where are the Fred Rogers of today? And it was sort of always a bit of a wet blanket, because the answer was, I don't know, maybe, you know, maybe we can't have nice things. I think Fred would have sort of scoffed at that probably. And in seeing Michael, I realized, wait, there are a lot of people that are trying. It's just a lot harder than it looks. It's a lot harder than it looks, but not impossible, and it's worth it. And in a moment where I think loneliness and anger and cynicism are so pervasive, the movie sort of swims upstream from that and says, well, we can make different choices and we can experience something really beautiful if we do.
Which I have to believe is your hope for audiences who view this film. And if I could quote one audience member who was actually cited in your press materials, who also happens to be your father, the famed cellist Yo-Yo Ma, he said that this film moved him to dive into difficult conversations that will begin to heal the fractures in our communities and to ask, how can I better practice that most fundamental call, love thy neighbor? What has it been like? I don't even know what to ask other than your dad is Yo-Yo Ma. And so, like, you know, which people idolize. And he's done so much, you know, in terms of like cross genre and promoting understanding of classical music and also different cultural types of music with the Silk Road Ensemble. So I don't know. Were you surprised to see his response to your film? In some way, his parenting of you, has that inspired the way that you're thinking about these issues, about understanding and caring for one another?
I think the film's brought us closer. I think there's always this fear when you have a parent who's extraordinary that where's the space for me, you know, as if somehow it's a zero-sum game. And you sort of get mixed up on where do you chart your own path and where are you stepping in someone else's footsteps and all of these questions. I think this film has been so clarifying for me about what's important to me and came from such an unexpected place, coming back to the uncomfy bit, coming from Grand Rapids, Michigan, a place I'd never been and a place I wasn't expecting to get taught a lesson from. But the fact that that lesson is at the core the same as what motivates my parents is beautiful. And again, that reminder of, oh, okay, well, we're actually pursuing the same thing. We're doing it in very different ways, but I don't need to feel like that goal, that hope, is any less mine than it is his. And in fact, the fact that it's shared is what's beautiful. You know, I think about it all the time growing up, going to his concerts. You know, you'd look around and you'd see people at the end of a concert. You don't know who they are. You don't know what they're thinking, but you can tell that they've been moved. And I think in some ways that's my hope with this film, that while we all come in with so much different cultural, contextual lenses through which we view the world, if you get to something that's really true and really deeply human, and I think these pastors were so generous and brave in doing that, we can all find ourselves moved and we can look to our right and look to our left in a movie theater and say, I don't know who you are, I don't know what you're thinking, but I know you were moved and I was moved. And maybe that means there's hope for a relationship between us, even if it turns out that we think very different things and we're very different people.
Well, I hope so many people see the film. It's called Leap of Faith. It is the latest entry into film from Nicholas Ma, who's an award-winning director, writer, and producer. His other film, which people should also rush out and rent if you haven't seen it yet, is about Mr. Rogers, the documentary called Won't You Be My Neighbor? Nicholas Ma, what a treat it has been. A delight to speak with you.
Such a pleasure, Julie. I'm so grateful for the time.
And thank you for getting uncomfy with us today. I would love to hear about an experience you've had recently where you chose to stay open and curious when you were uncomfortable. You chose to stick with the discomfort. And how did it go for you? Email your story to uncomfy@byu.edu. I'd love to feature you on the podcast. And keep in mind, I have another show called Top of Mind that I think you'll also really enjoy. We tackle tough topics in a way that helps us feel sometimes a little uncomfortable because we're hearing stuff that challenges us, but also helps us to see these important issues with more nuance and more empathy. You can find Top of Mind anywhere you get podcasts. Uncomfy is a BYU radio podcast. Samuel Benson produces it, and the team includes Enrique Prado, James Hoops, and Sam Payne. Kelsey Ney composed our theme music. I'm Julie Rose. Can't wait to get uncomfy with you again next week. It's Julie. Hey, one quick thing to mention to you. I would love to recommend a podcast called In Good Faith. It's from the BYU Radio family of podcasts. It's hosted by Stephen Cap Perry. And this show is all about connecting with believers from various religions. On Uncomfy, we're looking to have hard conversations, and it doesn't get harder than talking about religion when you have different traditions and beliefs. And this podcast is just so cool because Stephen talks with people about their own personal faith journeys, people from all walks of life, Christians, Buddhists, Jews, Muslims, many, many more. And it's a chance to hear their stories in their own words. And I always come away with a deeper understanding both of their faith and of my own faith in listening to these conversations. Plus, Stephen's just a really well-traveled guy, so his unique global perspective adds this really great richness to every conversation. So check out In Good Faith. You can listen on all the podcast apps, and I'd love to hear what you think about it.